I just wonder if enough has been done to safeguard children in church institutions. Well, certainly there's been a new move since the release of the final report of the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse. The organisation known as Catholic Professional Standards has been formed and has issued draft national Catholic safeguarding standards. And in Newcastle today, those draft recommendations will be discussed at a consultation between the organisation and child sexual abuse survivors and advocates. This morning we've heard concerns raised by Bob O'Toole from the Hunter-based group Clergy Abuse Network about the independence of the group.
I have had some conversations with some academics who have studied this stuff, and they've said this thing is just a sham. The whole business is just beggars belief. I think they must think we're stupid.
That's Bob O'Toole from the Clergy Abuse Network speaking to ABC News. So is what Bob's saying fair? Sherry Limbrick is the Chief Executive Officer of Catholic Professional Standards and has been good enough to join us for a chat this morning. Sherry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Paul. I'm well. Thanks very much.
Good. Are you independent?
Well, it's fair to say we have been established by the church leadership in Australia, so the Bishops' Conference and the group called Catholic Religious Australia, the peak body of the non-bishops, if you like, so the brothers and nuns. So we are established by them, and we wouldn't exist had they not set us up, to be perfectly honest, obviously. But we do operate independently. We've been set up with a board that has some pretty high-powered, reputable people, independent and forthright thinkers, and very skilled. And our day-to-day work, my day-to-day work, and the organisation is governed by them rather than the church.
So what exactly will Catholic Professional Standards do? What are your goals?
Sure. The Constitution, which is available on our website, anyone can have a look. But essentially, we've got four main functions. One is to set the standards. So as you've said, that's part of the conversation, hopefully, today in Newcastle this afternoon. We've taken those standards from the Royal Commission and built on them for the context of the Catholic Church in Australia. But so our job is to set the standards, to then monitor how those are being implemented across the Catholic Church in Australia through auditing. So auditing a diocese or auditing a religious congregation or an organisation that's affiliated with the Catholic Church, and then publicly reporting those findings, the findings of the audit. So reporting whether people within those institutions, and most particularly the leaders, so the bishops and provincials and religious leaders, are actually adhering to those standards. And the fourth function is to provide education and support, obviously not just to necessarily set the standards, but to actually improve the practice across the church in Australia.
Sherry, it's not really about the victims and survivors, though, is it? It's about the church.
Well, it's about making sure, as the Royal Commission set out, that all institutions, but most particularly our focus, obviously, is the Catholic Church, are safe places for children into the future. So as far as that's concerned, yes, the piece of work that we're focused on really is about children connected to the Catholic Church into the future. But a point that I did want to make, though, all of it is the reason we're talking to survivors, but we have added some elements to our standards that are different to the Royal Commission, and one of those is about the Catholic Church's support for adult survivors. So the Royal Commission standards didn't talk about that, but we have definitely put that into our standards about the support services that are offered and how adults who bring complaints before the church into the future are treated as complainants. So we have built on our standards over and above what the Royal Commission was looking for.
Sherry, can you understand the scepticism of the survivors and their representatives? Because historically, the church thought it was okay to move these criminals on from one parish to the next so that they could perpetuate their illegal activities and destroy lives.
No, I absolutely understand the scepticism. And in fact, we've done a number of these consultations now around the country. Newcastle is the second last one of those, and Sydney tomorrow. And so any of the conversations we've had with survivors is absolutely the starting point is scepticism, beyond scepticism, if you like. And that's absolutely reasonable. There is no reason they should trust us until we've done the work that we've set out to do. So really the important thing for us is to have the conversation, and we're keen to hear from any survivors or family members or advocates about anything that we're doing in terms of the standards and the audit process, and we'll take that feedback on board quite seriously. We have heard in other communities where the team have met with survivors that some survivors have said to us, this is the first time any organisation connected with the church has actually asked for their feedback, which is a pretty sad indictment on the church broadly, I'd have to say. So we're very keen to hear from them, but I also totally understand. I've worked with different organisations in my background. I'm a social worker by trade, and having worked in the past with Forgotten Australians in Victoria here, absolutely understand that we need to build trust by putting some runs on the board and having a genuine and transparent approach to everything that we do.
Just on transparency then, because that will be a key element of this,
yep.
If you make an adverse finding, is it possible for the church to bury that report?
No. So a very important part of the Constitution is that the publication of the reports, the responsibility for that rests with the board.
And
not with the church.
And you mentioned your background too as a social worker. Mm-hmm. Can you give us some indication of the makeup of the board? What sort of backgrounds do the representatives have?
Yes, totally. I mean, anyone who's interested in the detail can have a look on our website. But we've got 7 members of the board. Their backgrounds range from law at various both federal and state levels. We have a sort of child protection expert, someone from an education background, someone from disability and governance expertise, and also in regulation. So several of the board members either are currently involved in other regulatory contexts as government, on boards of government regulators, or have been in the past commissioners and various things. So it's a very esteemed board that is coming together. We're a new organisation. We really only started just coming up to 12 months ago. I was appointed and commenced, and some of the board members, the most recent 2 board members, only started in February. So we are forming ourselves as an organisation, but the board itself is pretty high-powered. There are no bishops or religious on the board. The 7 members are lay people, independent, and 4 women and 3 men, which would be the other interesting thing for those who've followed or understand Catholic Church. There was a big critique in the Royal Commission about lack of female leadership in church organisations, so it was actually very important that the board also saw itself as having quite a female or at least equal representation across gender. And it's also a national board, so given our job is across the church in Australia, which is a large remit, and we have board members from Queensland, Western Australia, New South Wales and Victoria.
Sherry, will the focus of the board be on inquiry? And I just wonder, on the back of the decision against Archbishop Philip Wilson, I would imagine that there are quite a few, not just the Catholic Church, but all institutions, some people in the past who've acted in what they considered to be the best interests of the church rather than the best interest of the victim or the survivor. There'd be a lot of nervous people. Do you anticipate that some of the people from within the church will actually knock on your door and say, hey, you know, this has happened, what should I do? Is that likely to happen for you?
Yes. So part of our role is to provide some of that advice. So I should be clear, we're not a complaint handling body, so we don't deal with the complaints against the church. We set the standards about how the church should deal with that, including, reporting to authorities and things like that. But it is a role that the church organisations can contact us for advice on a range of matters. And we'll obviously follow up where we when we commence auditing, which we hope to be able to do before the end of this year, that our first audits will be undertaken, that we will then increasingly play that role to be able to provide some independent advice also to church organisations about how to proceed and how to develop policy.
All right, we've heard rumblings of boycotting of today's meeting. What are your expectations today?
We so far have 13 people registered to attend this afternoon. I would encourage anyone who was considering boycotting to not do that, obviously. It's interesting because some of the concerns that I think have been raised, and I heard before the clip with Bob in the news, and others, are very similar to conversations that have happened at every consultation we've had around the country. As I said before, in answer to your question, people are rightfully sceptical until we can, you know, prove them otherwise, that this is something different and that we are going to hold the church to account. But I'd equally ask them to come and give us their expertise and input, the standards around protecting children into the future, but also, as I said, providing appropriate support services for survivors today is critical. We can't do that without hearing from people who've had the life experience. So I really would encourage people to still come along, and they'll have an opportunity to provide feedback. This won't be the only opportunity, though, I should say. Through our website, we've got people can sign up for our newsletter, and part of what we're doing is also designing an ongoing process for us to continue to hear the voice, if you like, of survivors and their advocates. So how do we continue to understand and get input from them about the success or otherwise of our standards is just as important as hearing from children today involved in the Catholic Church. I've said in other places, the measure of CPSL's success, or my success, if you like, is not about whether the bishops are happy. It's about whether, you know, if I speak to a child or a family member engaged in the Catholic Church today, that they can assure me that they understand their rights, they know who to talk to if they're not happy, and that they see action happening when they don't feel safe.
Okay. All right.
That's when I'll know we're successful.
And as you say, the proof will be in the pudding. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No worries. A pleasure. Thank you, Paul.
Sheree Limbrick, Chief Executive Officer of the Catholic Professional Standards, joining us on ABC Newcastle.